Hey, happy new year, everybody, and thanks for checking out Legion Podcast's Top 10 Horror Movies of 2020. Look, if you're not a subscriber, hop over to legionpodcasts.com, where you can find some of the best horror movie and opinion podcasts around. But look, enough jibber-jabber, let's do some listing. Number 10, Color Out of Space. It may be a tradition at this point to have an oddball Nicolas Cage starring movie on my list, but when you couple him with another oddball like Richard Stanley and adapt a tricky Lovecraft story into something weird and trippy and slimy, well, you have my attention. Stanley is, of course, the director who was famously kicked off the Marlon Brando version of Island of Dr. Moreau, and he returns to feature filmmaking with help. The folks at SpectreVision, namely Elijah Wood and Daniel Noah and Josh Waller, have already promised more out of this collaboration, and I could not be more pleased. Richard Stanley has his roots in 80s and 90s filmmaking, and Color Out of Space feels more like a Stuart Gordon movie than most Stuart Gordon movies. It's full of purples and pinks and reds, iridescent plants glowing and wavering, bodies melting and oozing, and threaded through it all, a sense that nothing will ever be quite right again. Cage's performance begins subdued, but it is not long before he is channeling his inner Trump and getting delightfully bonkers with the role. While bit by bit the world, affected by some object from space warping the land and everything on it, becomes something foreign and beautiful and dangerous. Color Out of Space is strange and offbeat, and it's all of the things I want in a psychedelic creature feature. There's more than a whiff of camp if that isn't your thing, but the light touch belies a deeper pessimism in the movie that is way more haunting than I first gave it credit for. Number 9. His House. The one thing you can say for the rise of conservative politics in America and the UK, among other places of course, is that it inspires some amazing art. His House, a Netflix premiere, is the tale of Bol and Riel, who have arrived in England as refugees from South Sudan. When they are fortunate enough to be placed in a home in an English neighborhood, they do their best to assimilate and start a new life for themselves, but there's something else in the house too, a force that will not allow the past to be forgotten. In a series of revealing flashbacks, we come to understand more of this family's past and the true cost of escaping a country as it rips itself apart. There's commentary about how the English neighbors and administration, as made flesh by Doctor Who's Matt Smith, see and treat our characters, but the real threat comes from within, and the movie isn't so lazy as to just be a movie about overcoming stereotypes or something like that. It's about the wages of survival and the compromises that we make with ourselves to just get to sleep through the night. Sopi Dorisu and Wunmi Mosaku, who Duncan and I fell in love with as Ruby during our Lovecraft Country recaps, they deliver a pair of powerhouse performances. Also, this may be the only movie on this list this year to deliver a jump scare that took me out of my seat. Oh yeah, it is a really, really good ghost story too, don't even worry about it. Number 8. Spiral. Shudder continues to be the gift that keeps on giving. While the very fine Impetigore from Joko Anwar didn't show up on my top 10 list, Shudder's commitment to bringing premier horror to their service is making me real happy about spending that $5 a month. Spiral is another on the list of exclusive Shudder movies that deserves to be seen. Set in 1995, Spiral sees a same-sex couple moving into a neighborhood that superficially is welcoming of their new additions, despite their quote, lifestyle. Ari Cohen is Aaron, who brings along his daughter, Kayla, played by Jennifer Laporte, and with Aaron's partner, Malik, who is played by Jeffrey Boyer Chapman, and he is incredible in this. Anyway, they intend to forge this new life for themselves, but soon Malik starts spotting some strange behavior from the neighbors, like the way they all gather in a circle and sway, and there's that weird book with no name on the spine, just that spiral shape. The formula isn't entirely new here. We certainly have a long history and horror of a family moving into a community that may or may not be what they seem. But what makes Spiral special isn't just the fact that we are substituting a gay couple for a straight one. It's the manner in which the movie reveals how minority groups are casually dismissed by the majority culture. Now, I'm not going to spoil how Spiral resolves itself, but it's in the last moments that the movie becomes something more transcendent, a call to continue to fight for the values we believe in and to hand the torch to those who come after. Progress, Spiral says, is slow and it is painful, but we must fight nonetheless, and we hope that those who follow may stand on our shoulders. It's really wonderful stuff. Number 7. Possessor. Comparisons between Brandon Cronenberg and his father David are inevitable, especially when the son plays in the same psychological minefields as his father. With Antiviral, Brandon Cronenberg's first feature, he proved that he could be as weird and sterile and provocative as the elder Cronenberg's work, but with Possessor, the younger Cronenberg also shows he has some chops of his own, delivering a movie that is borderline experimental. This is absolutely art house cinema, but that's not a bad word around here. I fully acknowledge Possessor may not be everyone's cup of tea, but it is a grueling movie if you can tap into its wavelength. The story is pretty simple. A woman played by Andrea Riseborough serves as a sort of psychic hitman, downloading her consciousness into hapless citizens to perform corporate espionage and assassinations. Then she retreats back into her own body with the aid of her boss, played by the always welcome Jennifer Jason Leigh. But things go sideways when her attempts to bounce out of her latest corporeal rental fail, and she is in a battle of identities with her host. With just a hint of psychedelia, Possessor takes aim at the idea of corporate culture and its appetite for its human workforce. While I feel Possessor has a really antiseptic and distant quality that never hooks me emotionally, the thematic critique of capitalism is the kind of punk rock horror I can really get behind. It's intensely weird, sporadically very graphic, and it doesn't play nice. But then again, neither do corporations. Number 6. The Invisible Man. By far the most mainstream entry this year is one of the most surprising too. When Universal announced its Dark Universe way back in 2017, they fumbled the ball with overwrought action movies that somehow, you know, forgot to be horror movies, not to mention good movies, along the way. But if this effort from Saw creator Lee Whannell is any indication, that course has been corrected. Elizabeth Moss, who is one of the finest actors of this generation, don't even kid yourself, fronts this reimagining where the adult Luke from Haunting of Hill House is such a beast of a man, Elizabeth Moss flees for her life. Well, her doing that forces her husband to take his own life, or so it would seem. What follows is as much a tale about women being believed as it is about the invisible threat stalking Elizabeth Moss. Worth repeating, Elizabeth Moss is stunning in this movie, and The Invisible Man is worth seeing for her alone. I'm also a believer in voting with the dollar, so please rent or buy this movie to encourage studios to take these kinds of chances with these properties. This is without question a horror film, but one in the tradition of Get Out, where social issues are being tackled, but it's with a really deft touch and an eye towards story over message. And it turns out, when the story and characters and performances are this good, it makes the message all that much clearer and more resonant. Who knew? Now we come to the top 5. Number 5, Hunter Hunter. Look, Hunter Hunter is a little messy. Its themes are not easily resolved or charted, and it doesn't go out of its way to make its intentions clear, and that can be plenty off-putting to some. But wrestling with these vague ideas of man's intrusion into the wilds and how the feminine is viewed in this environment made up of predators and prey, that's kind of my idea of a good time. Especially when you back it up with this really twisty tale of a family living on the bleeding edge of civilization and their encounter with a rogue wolf and something else far more dangerous. Familiar face to horror fans, Devon Sawa shows up as Meursault, the patriarch of this family of three, rounded out by Anne, the mother played spectacularly by Camille Sullivan, and Renee, who is the daughter, played by Summer H. Howell, who is also terrific. And there's a laundry list of things I love in this movie. There's the remote and beautiful setting, there's this woodsman expert embodied by Devon Sawa's character, eager to impart his wisdom about what shit smells like what animal to his daughter. And then there's this clash of cultures, as their frontier-style life is threatened by the intrusion of civilization, represented by a very creepy Nick Stahl. And there is this powerful ending that ranks among the year's best, like, what in the ever-living hell kinds of moments. While I think Hunter x Hunter buries some of its meaning in obfuscation, there isn't a single minute of this movie I'm not captivated and or horrified by. I love, love, love this movie. Speaking of loving movies, number 4, Spontaneous. I am becoming a Brian Duffield fan in a big bad way. He has not one, but two movies that fell into runner-up status on this list, Underwater and Lovin' Monsters, but while the rest of the world has been a mess, Brian Duffield managed to get three movies out this year that he wrote, but it was this one, Spontaneous, that he directed, and I think he scored big. While never once stringing the words school shooting together, Spontaneous is all about how to live one's life in a world where sudden and unexplainable violence is the norm. How do you reconcile love and trust when the people you care about could explode into a column of red mush any second? And that's the question at the heart of the film. And Mara, our heroine, played to perfection by Katherine Langford, is up to the challenge of this existential riddle. Mara is acerbic and funny and frustrated and broken and hopeless and joyous, and it's an emotional role and it's a performance that is so winning, I can't help but love this film. And her amour Dylan is played by the Clove Hitch Killer's Charlie Plummer in an equally charming role, and their romance is honest and warm in a way you rarely see in a movie like this. I found myself laughing in between my jaw truly dropping a couple of times in this movie, and a couple of tears. It's smart, it's honest, it's sarcastic, it's gleefully bloody at times, and it's maybe the movie I've recommended most this year, and I'm happy to do it here again. See Spontaneous. You're gonna thank me later. Number 3, The Wolf of Snow Hollow. Look, Jim Cummings has clearly taken to heart the idea that if you want to make it in show business, you make your own projects and you cast yourself. In this second feature film outing from him, the first being the dramatic Thunder Road, Cummings writes, directs, and stars in a horror movie and delivers a terrific one that has so much going on under the surface, I almost forget this is kind of a werewolf movie. Or is it? That's kind of the big question underlying the movie's plot, as the peaceful and picturesque town of Snow Hollow is plagued by the vicious murders of women on each full moon. The women are torn apart, in some cases missing pieces of their anatomy, which is way beyond anything this sleepy town's police department is used to. And while gossip in town rages, we bear witness to a family drama playing out between Jim Cummings' John Marshall, who lives in the shadow of his aging sheriff father, who is played amazingly by the late Robert Forster. Cummings' character is plagued by inept underlings, a deputy who is better at just about everything than him, by the way, she is played with a subtle perfection by Ricky Lindholm, and his by-the-fingernail sobriety, as Cummings also struggles with alcoholism and anger issues. And it is a truly tough balance to make a character like John Marshall likable. And maybe he never quite gets there, but Marshall is understandable. He's a guy who is getting by, but just barely. And all this killer werewolf business is pushing him into some dark corners of his own psyche. There are some threads showing in this pretty low-budget affair, but the emotional high-wire act it is pulling off in this movie is amazing. And did I mention that this movie is really, really funny, too? Alright, folks, number 2, The Hunt. Now, The Hunt appeared in cinemas this year just as the world was shutting down. But nonetheless, it garnered a lot of early criticism for its premise, much of it hurled by people who, you know, hadn't seen the movie, but were triggered by the very idea of it. So what is The Hunt about? Well, a text chain between a bunch of well-to-do liberal types goes public. The content is unfortunately a joke between them about hunting diehard MAGA types on an estate for sport. And sure enough, that's just what happens. But director Craig Zobel, who is perhaps best known for doing a film adaptation of Z for Zachariah, is up to more than just a simple critique of one side's politics versus another. Along with writers Nick Hughes and Damon Lindelof, Zobel is digging beneath the argument to critique the existence of the argument. And some have read this as cowardice and not picking a side, but that's precisely the point of the movie. This is a movie about the radicalization of politics and the inability of either side to communicate in a meaningful way with the other. It is, in fact, a movie about listening and understanding, but make no mistake, while the underlying message is important, Watching the Hunt isn't some college lecture about political compromise. It's a wild, raucous, gory romp with an ascendant Betty Gilpin in the lead. Saying an actor is a revelation is kind of a cliche, but boy is it true here. Gilpin is feisty and joyous and multidimensional, and also that last fight scene is so much fun. Look, there may be better horror movies this year, but there isn't a horror movie I had more fun with than The Hunt. And here we are, the number one horror movie of the year, Relic. First-time feature director Natalie Erica James may never make another feature film, and she'd still be lauded as one of the finest horror directors of this year, if not the decade. What she has managed to do with Relic is nothing short of remarkable. Countless filmmakers have attempted to take real-world horrors and create analogous, if fantastical, interpretations. Using this incredible cast, including Emily Mortimer as Kay, her on-screen mother Edna, played by Robin Nevin, and daughter Sam, a very good Bella Heathcote, Natalie Erica James crafts a story that is visually resonant and occasionally very unsettling. But what makes Relic my favorite film of the year is the aftershocks that accompany this viewing. For days, you may find yourself haunted by the final moments of this movie. And now, obviously, I don't want to spoil these final images, but suffice to say, Relic is all about the nightmare of dementia and the lingering horror of its hereditary nature. There is no monster that can be more terrifying than the knowledge that the disease you see in your parents and grandparents, that's yours too, and it's only a matter of time before it comes for you, that your body is filled with these genetic time bombs, and eventually they're gonna go off. Relic's terror is both well observed and it's unstoppable, and the inevitability of our own genetic landmines is more than enough to keep me up at night. This, folks, is essential horror viewing, and it's a modern masterpiece. And that's it for the best of 2020. Be sure to subscribe here and pop by legionpodcasts.com for more stuff just like this. In some cases, even better. Everyone have a very happy new year. And remember, above everything else, be kind to one another. And we'll see you in a year with more movies.